Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life. Good evening and welcome to Namaste Radio. I am your host, Marie, and I'm thrilled to be with you this evening. Tonight we have an amazing guest. Patricia Aberdeen is one of the world's leading social forecasters. For 25 years, she's been tracking how change impacts business, and through her books, talks, and workshops, Patricia has helped thousands of organizations and millions of people make the most of social change and transformation. She's co-author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Megatrends 2000, and Patricia's newest book is Megatrends 2010, The Rise of Conscious Capitalism, a blueprint of the social, economic, and spiritual trends transforming free enterprise. So we're going to be talking about just what conscious capitalism is. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Hi, Marie. How are you this evening?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for being with me. How are you?
I am just fine, looking out at a big snowstorm here in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, we had a big storm last week, and now we're having another one.
Are you...
So much for spring.
Wow. No, it's definitely spring here in Vancouver. It's beautiful and sunny. Well, the sun is starting to set, but it's been fabulous here.
Well, Vancouver is a beautiful place, and I envy you being located in such a fabulous spot.
I'm really lucky to be here. Well, hopefully the snow will clear up soon, and you can get settled into spring.
That sounds great. I hope so.
So Patricia, I'm looking at your book, Megatrends 2010, The Rise of Conscious Capitalism, and I'm wondering, what exactly is your definition of conscious capitalism?
Could I start with my definition of what a megatrend is and then
sure.
go into conscious capitalism? Because conscious capitalism is a megatrend, but what's a megatrend? Well, a megatrend is a large, overarching direction in society. It could be economic, it could be a political megatrend, it could be a demographic megatrend, it could be a spiritual megatrend, because I believe that the greatest megatrend of our time right now is the quest for spirituality, and that is all over, as you know, and as your listeners certainly know. But another important trend is this desire on the part of millions of people, really at the grassroots level, whether they're consumers or investors or visionary leaders or ordinary managers, like many of us are, a desire to do business in a new and much more positive way by living our values, living our ethics in business. And that is really what the trend of conscious capitalism is all about. And if we don't do that, we are going to be in for much more pain, like the kind of pain that we're in today. So I think the only way that we are going to revitalize business, I mean, you know, government intervention will help to a certain extent, but really truth and all of the transcendent values that we care about on our spiritual quest, we've got to live those values in business, and millions of people know that that is the truth.
Wonderful.
They're not a lot of them are on Wall Street, unfortunately. But that's really what conscious capitalism is it's a megatrend. And the old definition of a megatrend is it happening across many different geographic areas? And it certainly is true of conscious capitalism.
So when you say conscious capitalism, do you mean that capitalists are becoming more conscious, or what exactly do you mean by conscious capitalism? I mean, they seem kind of like an oxymoron.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people say that. Well, indeed, that's because traditional capitalism isn't particularly conscious, and I often call it unconscious capitalism, the capitalism as we have known it up to now, and I don't mean that with any particular judgment. Just what does conscious mean? It needs to be aware. And traditional capitalism hasn't been particularly aware of the ramifications of its philosophy of doing business. For example, in business, in economics, a very revered figure is Milton Friedman. He won the Nobel Prize in economics. And he, I am told by many people who knew him, was a truly generous person. And yet he could write an article in 1970 with this title, "The Social Responsibility of Business is to Increase Profits." And this was the philosophy of what I call unconscious capitalism, which is to say, Milton Friedman, good man though he may well have been, was truly not conscious of the extent to which, unfortunately, thousands and thousands of companies would come along and invoke that statement on his part to say, well, okay, we don't have any social responsibility. The only responsibility we have on this planet is to make money. And so many companies distorted what capitalism is about, which it really should be about the freedom of everyone to be free, number one, and to be able to experience prosperity. When capitalism works, that's how it's working. So consciousness and awareness, as you and I know it, and as we hope to learn it in our spiritual pursuits, is a huge part of our economic activity. And I must say that a lot of times I get a little frustrated when people can't connect the dots. I mean, I understand that it sounds like it's an oxymoron, just as you suggested, but you know, we need these values in business, not just to be good people, but to be able to prosper on the planet. That's what's going to allow the potential to ground the values. Well, for example, trust. Everybody talks about how in the good old-fashioned days of business, you did business on a handshake. You had trust between people. And when you have trust, prosperity flourishes, and that's true of so many other values that are really important.
So, Patricia, when we talk about profits, as a social and economic forecaster, I have to ask you this question. Why is it that companies, especially publicly traded companies, will be making, let's say, $20 billion in profits this year, but last year they made $21 billion in profits? So they say that they're losing money, because they made $1 billion less than they did last year, even though
right.
they are still making $20 billion in profits. So
absolutely, they're not losing money. You're absolutely right. They're not.
But they're laying people off because they made fewer profits than
the
year before.
That's right.
Why
they are. And that's because they're following the philosophy of unconscious capitalism. Conscious capitalism is like, you know, how we all really felt better about health care and medicine when we had when we talked about holistic medicine. Well, it's time to look at holistic business. Holistic business says, and this is really the philosophy of conscious capitalism, it says, yeah, profits are important. That's good. I want to make money. I want to be successful. I want my company to flourish. But the way that I'm going to do that, if I'm a conscious capitalist, is not by just looking at the bottom line, not by just looking at the profits, not by just looking at the investors and perceiving of them as your most important stakeholders, but looking at the whole of the business, starting with who are your stakeholders. Well, sure, investors are an important stakeholder, but so are customers, duh. I mean, if you don't have customers, you don't have a business. So you have to make your customers happy. You have to make your employees happy, because who's going to make the customers happy, and who's going to make the business profitable and successful for the investors? And you have to look at your suppliers. You have to look at the whole story, the whole story. So really, a very important part of conscious capitalism, there are probably two, but arguably three important points about conscious capitalism. It endorses, unlike Milton Friedman, it endorses what you could call the stakeholder view of capitalism. That is to say, if we really want to be successful, everybody in the company has got to be accorded their proper due. That's just what it means to be holistic. That's number one. So it takes a holistic stakeholder model of view of capitalism, not just shareholder capitalism. I mean, the kind of philosophy that Milton Friedman was articulating is a belief that the most important element in capitalism is the shareholder. Conscious capitalists disagree. They say it's got to be the whole. And as a matter of fact, the irony, Marie, is that when you look at the whole and care about all the stakeholders, you actually make more money, and not just a little bit more money, but a lot more money. One of the things about me as a writer is that I'm a research nerd. I have a master's degree in library science, and to me, you can talk about how business should be this way or should be that way, and I certainly do my fair share of that, but I love the studies. I love to be able to say that in a 10-year study, my colleagues who wrote the book Firms of Endearment, as a librarian, I'm always citing other books, Firms of Endearment studied 28 companies whose names you and I know, like Johnson & Johnson, known for its integrity, Google, known for its amazing creativity, IKEA, Costco, companies like this Costco, which is a great example of beating Walmart at its own game by really caring for its people, but we can go back to Costco. These 28 companies, similar to these companies, over a 10-year period, grew their profits by 1,100% compared to business as a whole for about 100%. So there is research data that shows that when you take this approach, this holistic approach, you actually beat the conscious capitalists, the unconscious capitalists at their own game, which is to say you make more money when you're conscious of your stakeholders and when you have a higher purpose than just making money. So that's what's called the paradox of profit.
Wonderful. Well, I really want to talk about how great conscious capitalism is and all of the positives, but before we get into that, I have a question that I noticed in the book. It seems a little contradictory for me, and maybe I'm misunderstanding it. But I was reading I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, the Ceres Principles, C-E-R-E-S.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The list of 10, protection of the biosphere, sustainable use of natural resources, reduction in disposal of waste, energy conservation, safe products and services, a bunch of things to live by, rules to live by. And you mentioned companies like Nike and Coca-Cola are participating in these series principles, but then in a later page of the book, you talk about how Coca-Cola uses genetically engineered ingredients, and we know that soda pop products, I mean, they don't really offer any benefit to the world. They give no health benefit. They contribute to childhood obesity, diabetes, tooth decay, and osteoporosis. So how is a company like Coca-Cola, how can they be considered a conscious capitalist?
I actually am not that familiar with Coca-Cola as a company, but they happened to sign these series principles, which were put out a couple of decades ago. And, you know, I guess my answer to that question would be that, and look at Nike. Nike, which decades ago was infamous for its sweatshop labor practices. Mm-hmm. I know in the case of Nike, they have turned it around so that they are really the poster child for what's known as vendor responsibility. So they really go out of their way to make sure that this really violation of human values, which scarred their brand enormously, they made it right in the case of Nike. Coca-Cola, I have to agree with you, it's a contradiction. They signed the series principles, and they go about doing their business in ways that are not acceptable to a lot of us. So nobody's perfect. I guess that's the bottom line, is that nobody's perfect. But I don't believe that their lack of perfection in the case of Coca-Cola means that we should kind of throw our hands up in the air and say, well, all of these big companies are irresponsible and not doing good things. Some of them are irresponsible, there's no doubt about it. But still, there is a standard that conscious capitalists pursue, and it's a higher standard in business, it's a higher purpose. I certainly wouldn't, I have never endorsed Coca-Cola as a conscious capitalist, but the people that I do think very well of, I bet you could find something that they've done that you and I wouldn't think was wonderful. And that's kind of how business is.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. And in your book, you give a few examples of companies that are making efforts to be conscious, and some of them, one of the examples are companies that introduce yoga classes and to provide them for their employees. Now, that's a nice start, but what more needs to be done in order for a company to truly be conscious?
Well, you know, there are so many different sides to there are really basically, from my perspective, two different sides to conscious capitalism. One of which is social responsibility. And you kind of hit the nail on the head there when you talked about the series principles. That's the outer-directed element of consciousness. You take a certain amount of responsibility for the environment in which you live. But there's another element in conscious capitalism, at least for me, and that is the spiritual element. That is the people who really live their values working in corporations. And, you know, there aren't as many of them as I would like to see, but the ones that I have known about and heard about and interviewed truly impress me. One of them is Bill George. He is a retired chairman and CEO of a company called Medtronic, which makes medical devices. They're based in Minneapolis. He has since retired from the company, and he teaches at Harvard Business School, as a matter of fact, and writes really fantastic books about what I would call conscious capitalism, and he really mostly focuses on leadership. And Bill George was very out front about his meditation process, and shared with people that he had a meditation practice, and he was actually photographed in Fortune magazine meditating in his den at home. And the fact that he would be so, at the time, this is probably 10 or 15 years ago, when he would have been laughed out of the groups of senior executives in business, he had the courage to stand and take a stand and say, this actually is what I believe in, and this is what I do, and I believe it helps my business. So that was an important element. And Bill George, just to kind of connect it to the profit side, he would say, again, with extraordinary courage, profit isn't the most important thing to me. Our investors are not the most important thing to me. The most important thing to me are the patients who receive our medical devices and their well-being are what matters. And because I hold that view, I actually succeed more financially than other companies who think it's so wonderful to be all in favor of profit exclusively.
Wonderful. So that's Medtronic.
Medtronic, yep, and Bill George, and he's quite a fixture in the business community.
And when you bring up the philosophy of, you know, caring about the customer, caring about the patient instead of the bottom line, at what point do you think we really lost sight of that? Because, I mean, when you create a product for someone, it's for use. You create it with the customer in mind.
Exactly. Yes, well, I think we lost sight of it as we got, you know, as you and I began this conversation, when you say, how about these companies who say, I made $20 billion this year in profits, so we're really losing money because we made $21 billion last year. We lost it by, you know, losing our passion for the reason we get up and go to work in the morning, by acquiescing. And, you know, it's easy for people like me to blame it all on Wall Street. And I do blame a fair amount of it on Wall Street, you know. But I do believe in the sacred power that exists in every person. And I do believe that it is my responsibility as a manager, if I'm a manager, my responsibility as a financial analyst, to have that the love and the values and the passion in my heart when I go to work. And so, you know, you can't just keep saying, oh, when we get to the values-driven consumer, how many people just say, oh, I don't have any power. I don't have any power in business. It's just, well, guess what? 70% of the U.S. GDP, and I'm sure it's very, very close in Canada and in Europe, 70% of the GDP is attributable to consumer spending. You have a hell of a lot of power. You have the power to say yes to a product that reflects your values, maybe a product about social justice, maybe it's fair trade. Now it started off just fair trade coffee, but fair trade flowers and tea and sugar and fruit and all of these products. You have the power to say yes to products that embody social justice because they pay a fair price to farmers and to craftspeople in developing worlds, and to boycott companies that don't reflect your values. So you have a lot of power as a consumer. You have a lot of power as an investor. You can say, I'm only going to put my money, I have a motto, never invest in any company that isn't as conscious as you are. So how do you know how conscious a company is? You know how conscious it is by getting up to speed on the mega trend of socially responsible investing, and by studying companies, investment companies like Domini Social Investments, founded, oh, I guess it's close to three decades ago, by Amy Domini, an idealistic young woman who said, my clients, she was a stockbroker, my clients should have the right to invest their money according to their values, and built a very successful company from that premise. So I believe that when we destroy the firewall that exists between business and spirituality or human values, if spirituality is something that, let's say, as a business person might not be comfortable with. You know, when we destroy that firewall and say, you know what, I want my money to reflect who I really am and what I believe in, and that satisfies me. And if I make more money, terrific. If I don't, I'm satisfied. You know, there's a tobacco company called Altria that used to be called Philip Morris. And it's, you know, it sells tobacco. It sells a very unhealthy product, but it pays these big dividends. And, you know, some people say, yeah, I'm not really in favor of smoking, but gosh, I want to be smart about my money. And so I own this stock. Well, I don't think that's a very good idea. I don't think it's satisfying. And I think that you could feel a lot better and probably make more money investing in something else and studying, getting up to speed on what maybe some of the green innovations and green investing opportunities exist that would be far more satisfying. So I'm just a great believer in, you know, you know, they talk about the separation of church and state. Well, I'm against the separation of spirituality and business. I think that we want to be in alignment for personal satisfaction and for prosperity.
Wonderful. Well, if you have a question for Patricia, the number to call to get on the air is 1-347-202-0129. That's 1-347-202-0129. 29, and you mentioned Chapter 5 and Chapter 7, the values-driven consumer and the socially responsible investment boom. Maybe we should go over the seven new trends.
That sounds terrific.
So number one is the power of spirituality from personal to organizational.
Yeah, that's that whole thing about the firewall dissolving. And by the you know, how did spirituality get into business? Well, because people are in business, and people are turning on to their spirituality. They're going on a spiritual journey. And when you go on a spiritual journey, I know in my case in 1994, spirituality had always been an important part of my life. I cared about it. In 1994, I was going through a separation from my co-author, and we used to have CNN on all the time, and I moved into my own apartment, and I shut off the television. I did occasionally watch the Weather Channel, as I will be watching later on tonight with the snowstorm, but I just longed for the silence. I just longed for the silence, and for 2 years, I didn't read newspapers or watch television. And, you know, for a social forecaster who was supposed to be up on everything, that was a very radical move for me, and it was the best thing I ever did in my life. It was, you know, getting all of the negative energy out of television and all of the stuff that's covered in the newspaper and just giving myself a break from it. And just after that two-year period, I spent the next 8 years mostly pursuing my interest in my spirituality, and out of that came this desire to bring the two together in this book that we're talking about tonight, Megatrends 2010, The Rise of Conscious Capitalism. So that's chapter one. Chapter two is kind of my nitty-gritty economic chapter. It talks about what traditional capitalism is all about and what some of the alternatives to it are, some of the grassroots attempts to live values in capitalism. I have a wonderful profile of a woman named Shelley Alpern, who is a shareholder activist and who talks about the day she went up against the chairman of it was called Texaco at the Chevron at the time, and how her morning meditation that day helped her to keep her cool and do something wonderful at that shareholders meeting. So then from that, we go on to, I'm going to have to check my table of contents page here.
It's leading from the middle, and I think that I'd really like to focus on that. It seems like a really key point.
Well, you know, it's kind of the same theme that I was talking about in regard to, oh, I don't have any power, I'm just a consumer, or I don't have any power, I'm not a big investor, I don't have any power, I'm not a manager, I'm not the CEO. But you do have power. You have your moral power. You have the power that might be called your informal authority. You have the power of how you influence your peers, because everyone is a leader. Everyone is a leader, and if you have just a small team or a small department, and if you're not even the team leader, your vibration is moving out among the people around you. And you know how, you know, one person in a small team who is carrying a lot of inspiration and carrying a lot of positive energy changes it all for everyone. And one person who's carrying a lot of negative energy changes it for people too. So who you are as a middle manager maybe or as a team leader is very important. And in that book, I cited two fantastic books, one of which was called The Tempered Radical, and the other book was called Leading Quietly. And these were both published by Harvard Business School Press, which really impressed me so much in the sense that they were really demonstrating that true leadership can come from middle managers and from people who aren't CEOs. And this, we had this theory of the swashbuckling entrepreneur and the usually male, of course, the powerful CEO, the charismatic CEO. And these authors that were published by Harvard Business Press, and actually one of them was a professor at Harvard and one was at Stanford, They talked about how, no, that's not true. That's not the, that's not what really makes an impact in business. What makes an impact is living your values as a manager, regardless of what your job title is. So that's leading from the middle.
I have a question more about leading from the middle.
Yep.
What would you suggest for people, maybe you're going to suggest one of the books that you just recommended, for someone who is working in a company and that maybe isn't reflective of their values, but they're in a position, especially in this economy, where they don't feel that they can move on to a new position right now, how can people take their values and incorporate that into the business environment?
Well, first of all, if you can possibly leave a business environment that isn't nurturing to you, you must try. You must try. And so often we invoke the excuse of saying, well, you know, it isn't a good time. And, you know, some, if we keep invoking that excuse again and again, you know, we're 65 years old and we're getting the crummy watch from the for 50 years of service or 35 years of service or whatever, and we've wasted our lives. So, you know, I don't believe in being a hero, Marie. I really don't. And if you, if for short periods of time you feel, well, I've got to, you know, I've got to keep this job. It's killing me. I've got to keep this job. Well, you know, all I can say is the people who have looked that fear in the face and said, you know what, my well-being is worth more than money to me. And within my well-being is my the power that's going to attract success for me in another situation. And if I've got to stay here for a little while longer, I'm going to damn sure going to be getting my resume out and looking for new alternatives, including being an entrepreneur. And I don't mean necessarily a you know, maybe a one-person operation. How many great consultants got their start by working for a company and going to the client and saying, you know, I'm going to go off on my own. What do you think? And the client says, I'm with you. You've made me happy. You've done more for me than this company you work for. And I'll be your first customer and let's go for it. So in addition to jobs, we need to be thinking of self-employment and entrepreneurship. Those are two of the best jobs.
Wonderful.
Well, you know, I understand. I understand the point that you're making. And we all know that there are people who are in difficult circumstances like that. But, you know, at some point, you know, what's the purpose of caring about spirituality if in our spirituality we can't find the courage of our convictions? It's challenging sometimes, but how many miracle stories do you hear about the person who, and the quotes that you and I love to hear about how the universe changes when you have the courage to step out there and ask for what you really desire. And so at the very least, you should be getting in touch with a perfect job.
Wonderful. And the next chapter is spirituality in business.
Yes. Yes, and that's the chapter of all about all of the grassroots activities, all of the programs that really not very many people hear about, but I certainly went to the trouble of finding out about them. That chapter starts with the story of the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce and how once a month they have their brown bag on spirituality and work and all of the diverse people, of course. San Francisco has an amazingly diverse population, and they show up at the Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, here the Chamber of Commerce just symbolizes capitalism. And here these people come together, and they light a candle, and they have some silence, and they share about the challenges in their work life and what support one another in solving them, and many wonderful things have come from that. So there have been and continue to be many grassroots organizations all over. And my goal in that chapter was just to say, I'm going to give you so many examples in this chapter and just string them together like cranberries on a Christmas tree, like beads. And so that by the end of that chapter, I've gotten my heavy duty philosophy out in chapter two, and I've talked about the managers. And in this chapter, you will not be able to finish this chapter and say, I don't know what she means by the spirituality in business. I guess it must exist.
So what about when we're talking about spirituality in business, and this was brought up, what about the balance between spirituality at work and sensitivity to different religions and belief systems regarding the law?
Yeah, that's a very, very important point. Because, you know, sometimes you have people who are major advocates of spirituality in business, and whether spiritual people like it or not, there are many people out there who are advocates of religion in business. And that's a very different thing. But many major companies, such as Ford Motor Company, and, you know, in Detroit there's a very large Muslim population. A lot of auto workers are from are Islamic. That's their religion. And there are certain Islam, unlike a lot of other religions, Muslims are required to pray in the middle of the day. And so this caused all kinds of challenges in the auto industry. And so I talk about how Ford in particular, with its employee groups, changed one of the washrooms into a place where people could wash their hands for the, which they have to do before the ritual prayer around noontime. So a lot of interesting challenges. And what I find inspiring about the whole notion of spirituality in the workplace usually is about silence. It might be about meditation, whereas religion in the workplace might be about, an optional Bible study class or something at lunchtime. And many corporations have amazingly been sensitive enough and astute enough to balance these potentially conflicting situations. So hats off to them, and Ford is one of them, and so is Intel, the big chip company.
Wonderful. And so we've talked a bit about Chapter 5, the values-driven consumer, but I think that's another really key topic that we need to discuss, is how the consumer really is the consumers hold the power, ultimately.
Very much so, very much so. And those consumers now are tending to go shopping with their values in their pocket. They're saying, you know, I care about social justice. I certainly care about health. I mean, there are whole new industries because of values-driven consumers that didn't exist before, like organic supermarket chains like Whole Foods and many other wonderful smaller mom-and-pop stores that sell organic food. And even the values themselves metamorphosize in time in interesting ways, because it was all about organic food. And today you see the values-driven consumer wanting more. It's not, if I live in Massachusetts, do I really want organic produce from California that's got all those petroleum miles on it? Not necessarily. I mean, what about some, especially if it's easy enough to do? And now there are probably greenhouse farms. Yes, they'd have to be in the Northeast, where instead of the California, let's say, mixed greens that you buy for a salad, you find more and more options because consumers have demanded them of getting your greens from greenhouse operations that might be in a very urban part of Boston. So there's a brand called Olivia's Greens, and now I find those available in the stores. They're organic and local. And so that's what the values-driven consumer cares about now. And organic food was so huge, but boy, it's nothing compared to all of the huge growing trend about non-toxic cleaning products, non-toxic cosmetics. Because what I learned in my research, which really shocked me, was that as much as you and I don't want toxins in our food, the digestive system is actually quite robust in terms of sorting those toxins out, whereas breathing in the fumes of, I mean, anybody who's sensitive to mold or to toxins in, let's say, cleaning products knows this for a fact. Breathing in those fumes or putting a cosmetic that's got a toxic chemical on your skin, no filters at all. It goes right into your body, and it's much more harmful. And that's why I believe that the values-driven consumer is going to be bringing those issues more and more to the fore, now that we've made amazing progress on organic food being more available.
Wonderful. And when we talk about a consumer, you were talking before about stocks and shareholders, and now we tend to look at shareholders separately from consumers, but really they're consumers of those stocks.
That's true. I never thought of it that way. Certainly, investors are consumers of shares of a company. But, you know, really, I think the deeper thing in the whole conscious capitalism sector is that there's an amazing affinity between the consumers and the investors. The kinds of consumers, for example, who care about green energy solutions are the kinds of consumers who will buy those products, they'll build green homes, and they'll also want to invest in solar energy perhaps, or wind energy, or equally important, coal companies that convert coal-fired plants into more environmentally neutral things. Because, you know, coal is just has been part of the energy system, and everybody would love to have solar and wind, but it may take some time. And meanwhile, let's get those smokestack plants cleaned up and get some good technology in there to do that. That's there in green energy. I've talked a lot about it in that book about the investment opportunities, but there's still a little bit of a speculative feel to some aspects of green investing. It can do enormously well one year, and it can lose money the next year. It's just, you know, kind of what happens in a new industry. Whereas if investors are more conservative, I would definitely say start looking for some of those opportunities of clean investing in retrofitting the old technology and cleaning it up.
Wonderful. And what about Chapter 6, The Wave of Conscious Solutions?
Yeah, well, we got a little bit into that conversation when you talked about yoga. And boy, a lot of companies do offer yoga. A lot of companies offer meditation. Google, for example, is very famous for its meditation programs. It invites Tibetan Buddhists and brain scientists to come in and talk to the people, and there are employee meditation hours. And, you know, a lot of companies will say, well, you know, we do yoga and we do meditation for stress management, stress costs business, $200, $300 billion a year. And so it's a good thing to do, and that's true. But it's also true, and this is going to kind of get us into another area that I wanted to make sure that we talked about, and that is the importance of creativity, the embracing of some spiritual tools and techniques and what it can do for our creativity. Because those technology companies like Google, like Apple, that a sponsor or co-sponsor employee meditation, they're getting a side benefit, which is, of course, that meditation does amazing things to the brain, and it fires up the alpha and the theta and the delta brain waves that help us to be more creative. And I want to make a link here and a bridge here, and to say that in the earlier Megatrends books, I used to always talk about how the shift from the industrial to the information society, and this was big in the 1980s, we're in the information society. Well, I believe that the information society is drawing to a close, and this is a very, very important aspect of conscious capitalism, which is that it's bringing in a new era where the power of human consciousness, the genius of human consciousness, is what the foundation of new job creation and the foundation of new wealth creation. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the creative brain power in a company like Apple, with the new products that it launches, and in a technological society, this is a very, very important theme, it is where it is, not because of information, because of the power of human consciousness. And, you know, you guys at Namaste have a very wonderful author named Eckhart Tolle who talks about the power of now. And that genius of human consciousness, he is talking about that ability to be in the moment and to be able to be creative and to be able to be present to your work is an element of conscious capitalism that I can't even begin to understand it or its ramifications. But I must say it excites me. It excites me more than many of these other themes, because the success of a human being, the success of a company, is more and more dependent on our potential to be present, which we don't really learn in corporations. We learn in pursuing our spiritual cares and interests, but that's where it all is. I mean, I once was kind of trying out this theory in the East Coast, and I said, look, technology is consciousness externalized. And there I was on the East Coast, and they're looking at me like, what are you talking about, lady? Technology is consciousness externalized. And so then, fortunately for me, I had a speaking date in Silicon Valley just, I don't know, a couple weeks after, and I said, okay, I'm going to try this one more time. I hope I don't bomb. Technology is consciousness externalized. And they looked at me, and they were like, well, duh, of course, naturally. So they totally got it, because they're so into technology, and they know that that's exactly what's going on. So the new the information economy is over. We have entered the new economy of consciousness, where new things get created. Well, here's my favorite example of the new economy of consciousness. How is it that J.K. Rowling can buy and sell the Queen of England?
Mm-hmm.
She generated through the power of her consciousness, through her ability to be present and to create an amazing world, she created wealth. I mean, imagine like the English royal family, years and decades and centuries of wealth being acquired. And all of a sudden, here comes this, you know, welfare mother from Edinburgh or wherever she was from, and who was impoverished, and who over the course of, 7 years, let's say, created out of the genius of her consciousness more wealth than the Queen of England. I mean, that's how it goes in the new economy of consciousness. It all comes out of our ability to be conscious and our ability to be present.
Well, to quote your book, consciousness is now as valuable to business as mundane assets like capital.
More valuable. I was being conservative, Marie. I brought that 5 years ago, you know, and I was thinking they're going to lock me up if they read this. Consciousness is much more valuable. I think that if we had Steve Jobs here or Schmidt, I can't remember, is it Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, and we said that to them, they'd be like, well, of course. You think we don't understand that? I mean, our assets walk out of the door at night and go into their cars and drive home. Those are our assets. I mean, the building, who cares about the building? You know, and there's a guy named Richard Florida who several years ago said already 30% of us, and I believe it's 40% by now, make our living through the power of our creativity. That's the new economy of consciousness. I mean, I tend to use the word consciousness, but I mean, creativity is a pretty good word too.
Wonderful. And do you have anything else to say about consciousness and the new economy of consciousness? It's so exciting just to hear those words, the new economy of consciousness.
Yeah, no, it is very exciting. I'm going to, I in my new book, which I won't be published for a while, I have a whole new chapter on innovation. I didn't have a chapter on innovation. I mean, I guess the thing I would say is that, you know, when we talk about that, we think about engineers and scientists and maybe artists and how they are the people who really know how to be present with their consciousness and to create from that. But I believe that in the new economy of consciousness, that ability to be present and to really download from spirit, let's face it, your best ideas is going to be increasingly important for leaders. And I dare say, if we had more leaders, financial leaders, who sat and engaged in my favorite activity, which is sitting and journaling and just being present with myself. When I say journaling, it isn't as active as it may sound, but it's a way of being present and for me to listen to what solutions the spirit have to offer to me. I mean, if we had more financial leaders, we wouldn't have had the subprime crisis. If we had people who were more reflective, if we had leaders who embraced the concept of self-mastery. You know, this is where spirituality really speaks to business, which is that if you can't even master your own thoughts and emotions, how can you possibly be a good leader? How can you possibly master the outer universe? The mastery of yourself has to come first, and that's another wonderful theme. May I just mention something that I want to share with your listeners? There is a wonderful organization in Phoenix which has a name very similar to yours. They're called Namastera, Namaste, and then Era, Namast, and then Era added to it. And
A-R-A or Namaste?
N-A-M-A-S-T-E-R-A, meaning the era or the time.
The era of
Namaste. Yeah, the era of Namaste. And they are very spiritually oriented and also very oriented towards being a community that thrives together by being responsible. And they have invited me down to the Phoenix area in the middle of April of next month, April 16th and 17th, and we're going to do a two-day retreat about a lot of these ideas. So if any people are interested, I would love to have them go on to Namastera, Namastera.com, and find out about this retreat that we're going to be doing. It's actually
cool.
For women.
So it's for women.
For women.
What the date again is? April
16th and 17th.
April 16th and 17th, and it's Namastera.com.
Namastera.
And I'll put a link to that up on my website as well, spiritualshow.com.
Oh, thank you so much.
And it's going to be in Phoenix?
It's going to be outside of Phoenix in a town called Chandler, a historic town. I've never been there, but I think it sounds like an Old West historic town, so it looks like it's very colorful. And it's limited to a small, intimate group, and we're going to do some coaching work before the event and some follow-up work. And then I'm going to match everyone to a super mentor. So they'll have a coaching session with me before the event, and then I will match them with a what I call a super mentor in an area that might be, oh, maybe green investing or marketing or social entrepreneurship or venture capitalist for entrepreneurs who are starting a new business. So they will be able to bounce some of these ideas about conscious capitalism and how it really impacts them and their business and their job and their company with some people beyond our little group. But it's going to be a very intimate group, just women, and happily we're getting complaints from the men. So my partner there, a wonderful woman named Star Simmons, is telling the men, okay, we'll do a men's retreat later on, but first we're going to do the women's retreat. And so many women, you know, conscious capitalism was created for women entrepreneurs and managers to such a large extent. And I want to tell you something that's from my future work, which is that, you know, in that chapter that we talked about with the, you know, the swashbuckling CEOs, another handy-dandy research fact is that this wonderful company called Towers Perrin studied hundreds of thousands of employees from 18 countries, all over the world, and found that when people are engaged in their work, when they're passionate about their work, and this speaks to the middle manager, because they're the people who get the work done. It's not the CEOs and their sort of ego-based strategies that make a company profitable, but it's passionate people, it's engaged people, and these studies show that profit increases 19% when people are engaged and passionate about their work, and that when people are disengaged or apathetic, that profit falls 32%. So, you know, here I finally have these numbers to say to people and to say to women, this is the way you've always wanted to lead. You've always wanted to lead from the heart. And now, you know, I finally, research nerd that I am, finally have the facts and figures to show you that indeed that is what's successful. You know, I should write a book called Everything You Thought You Knew About Business Was Wrong.
Well, Patricia, you're totally blowing my mind here, and we just have like 3 minutes left in the show. We could talk about this all night. I want to sign off. Are you okay to stay on the line for a couple extra minutes?
Sure.
Great. So if you're listening to this live, you can catch the additional minutes on podcast, because I just want to ask Patricia a couple extra questions before we wrap up. So before we sign off, definitely check out namastepublishing.com if you want to join the Namaste Global Community and connect with other like-minded individuals as well as like-minded conscious entrepreneurs as well. And if you're interested in the event with Patricia Aberdeen, April 16th and 17th, go to Namastera, namastera.com to check that out, or check out my website, spiritualshow.com. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, Patricia, we're talking about conscious capitalism and these Fortune 500 companies, and there are maybe just a handful of companies that are truly embodying all of what conscious capitalism is all about. But do you see this as an evolution of our spirituality, or is this just an evolution of what's working and what's making money?
Well, it's certainly both. It's certainly both. It is an evolution of our spirituality. It is a movement of, you know, individual transformation is great, and it's the foundation of global transformation. But I think most spiritual teachers would argue it, you know, it doesn't end there. It grows. It takes on a life of its own. When we go on a spiritual journey, we fill up with so much positive energy that at a certain point we're overflowing. And so what do we do with that overflow? Well, usually we find a cause, we find a mission, and the victims become advocates, and the warriors become statesmen, although not soon enough for most of our taste. And in business, the executives and the managers become corporate change agents as they vow to live their values more and more in the business that they live in. And so it starts from moving from individual transformation to group transformation to global transformation. And that's what it's all about.
Wonderful. And I want to put out your website before the hour wraps up.
Thank you.
PatriciaAberdeen.com.
Yes. Can I spell it for you? Of course.
Yes,
www.
Please.
And it's Patricia, P-A-T-R-I-C-I-A, and Aberdeen, A-B-U-R-D-E-N-E.com. But you know what? My brilliant friends at Google, if you spell it wrong, they're going to say, didn't you mean blah, 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 and they'll probably correct it for you.
And see, some creative person came up with that idea.
That's right. Exactly right.
So I'm wondering, Patricia, the show's going to fade out in about 20 seconds, so catch the last couple of minutes on podcast if you're listening live. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. I love you. We will see you next week. Thank you for your wonderful participation in this fabulous hour. Patricia, are there, like, maybe what are the top three things that you would like to see happen if every corporation could just take on a little slice of consciousness? What are the top two or three things that you'd like everyone to take on?
Certainly the respect for and cultivation of quiet time in business. That would be my number one. I mean, this it's wonderful to have a meditation room. It's kind of like, you know, like reading hour. It's like there has to be time when it's okay for the phones to be shut off. And I have actually heard of corporations who do this, where there's a half an hour where the phone doesn't ring. So cultivation of silence. And within that would be number one. Okay, number two, definitely a growing sense of consumers and investors and employees and how this triumvirate and suppliers too. But if we could think about those three in a holistic way, so that we can say, yes, investors are important, they supply the seed capital, but they can't, without employees and without customers, this company doesn't exist. We have we cultivate a holistic view of things. And then the third point, I think, would be this notion of how living your values as a leader is so critical to your success. And that, again, is a topic kind of like the innovation piece that we sort of got into. That I'm going to talk about in my new book, of all these examples of wonderful companies that succeeded because one individual was strong enough to hold on to their values and to believe when no one else did. So that would be number three.
Wonderful. Well, Patricia, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Your book is Megatrends 2010, The Rise of Conscious Capitalism. Where would you prefer people to purchase your book?
Amazon.
Amazon? Okay.
Is the best place to get it. And if you come up with a book with a white background, that's the hardback. I believe they're out of stock on the hardback, but you really don't want the hardback because the solid red covered paperback has got all the updates. Before the paperback came out, I updated all the facts and figures that I possibly could. So you really want the paperback. And I will be opening a store on my website at some point, but I haven't done that yet. I'm a little behind the curve there, but definitely go to Amazon.com.
Wonderful. Well, we have a link to the red paperback copy on the Blog Talk Radio page for this
Great.
Episode, so people can just Great. Easily click that. It'll take them right to Amazon. Yeah. So thank you so much for being with me this hour. It has been such a pleasure. Thank you for writing Megatrends 2010 and getting the word out there about consciousness.
Well, Marie, thank you so much for having me. I had an absolutely wonderful time with you. Your questions were so penetrating, and you asked me many questions that no one has asked me before, and so I thank you for your thoughtfulness in looking over the book.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm glad I asked questions that haven't been asked before. That's exciting.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. It's just been a pleasure talking to you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, and have a wonderful evening. And enjoy the snow.
Yes, I think I'll go out and make a snowman. Well, I guess it's a little late for that. It's dark.
Okay, well, take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, Marie. You too.
Thanks, Patricia. Bye-bye. Bye. So that was Patricia Aberdeen, Aberdene. PatriciaAberdeen.com is where you can contact her. Again, if you want to check out that event, April 16th and 17th in Phoenix, namastera.com is the website. And, of course, as always, you can join us for further insights and sharing at namastepublishing.com. Next week, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Leo, and he is going to be discussing the Anastasia phenomenon. So you'll find out all about what that is next week. Thank you so much for being with me. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful evening. Be well.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.